So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
This is Midday Chalk.
Former coacher Zach Smith is making some allegations out there about a former coach he used to work with, Tom Herman, on Twitter last night and stuff. Are you aware of that? Do you just move on from that? What's just sort of your approach to that?
Move on. Noon to 3.
No, why would we do that? I mean, say this was not an important game or he doesn't need to play or... I mean, I think we need to do a better job of the people playing around him, doing what they're supposed to do so he doesn't get hit. And I'm not really interested in any of your suggestions about how we should manage our team and what we should do to try to get better, just because we're playing the Citadel.
With your host, Rick Ballew.
I don't see no reason for him not to be our starter right now. DeAndre is not the issue with our football team. There's a lot of other issues. He can't block for himself. He can't go and catch the ball. You know, he can't play special team. He can't tackle it.
Lauren Rue.
Kyle Trask had a fracture in his foot, so he'll be out, be possible for a return for the bowl game.
And Leon Searcy.
Yeah, Linda's going to have surgery.
Out for the season.
He'll be out for the season.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. The hits keep coming for the Jacksonville Jaguars. More bad news this time, the offensive line, where they are already without Cam Robinson. Now you add to that list Brandon Linder, who is yet to make it through a season unscathed, gone for the year, a torn ACL. We'll have a full conversation on this offensive line coming up momentarily. But we do want to keep it with football in the Jags, but we'll go in another direction. First things first, Lauren Rue is here, Leon Searcy is here. I'm Rick Ballew. The show is produced, as always, by our good friend, Styx. Leonard Fournette turns around last night on Instagram and says, I promise I ain't switching sides. My brother's for eternity. I only posted this pic. It shows him rolling dice with his teammates, rolling craps or dice or whatever it is. And, you know, he says, the only reason why I posted this pic is to show you all, no matter how the dice roll, bet on yourself, even when you in the hole come back throwing licks. So let's kick it off with that. Is this a response to just overall negativity by the Jaguars fan base, the fact that they've lost five in a row? Is this in response, I ain't going anywhere, based on what Jalen Ramsey tweeted out one day ago? Let's begin with you, Lauren. What do you believe?
Oh, I have no idea, and this is just, it's comical almost to an extent, because again, these are the conversations that you have, I guess, when you're 3-6. When you are covering a team that's 3-6 who can't find a way to win, we are now tasked with the problem assignment of breaking down Instagram and Twitter posts. I don't know, Rick.
It's a distractor. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's don't look at what's actually going on.
There you go.
That they've lost five straight. Making comments on Twitter and Instagram and trying to figure out what they mean. I don't know. I'll go one step further. Is this a response to people who gave him a hard time on Twitter? I don't know that that happened for celebrating that touchdown we talked about. I mean,
could be.
I have no idea. I have no freaking idea. I do know this. It doesn't change the fact you lost five straight, and it sure as hell ain't going to help
win. No.
None of this helps you win. None of any of what we've talked about, none of the Twitter nonsense, none of that helps you win.
It's much to do about nothing, to be quite honest with you. The fact of the matter is, I think that this Instagram post may be a reaction to the fans and the media about the hard time we probably gave him about the hamstring that lingered for, 5 to 6 weeks or whatever, and this is a shot back, and that he's going to stick with his teammates, and we're going to ride this thing on out, and we're going to leave all the distractors out the way. But it still doesn't distract from the fact that you're on a 5-game losing streak, and you lost a game you should have won twice in a row, and he's coming to Jalen's defense too. They're good buddies. I heard they're good buddies. Rick had alluded to the fact that they're good buddies. They jaw on each other in the locker room and all that kind of stuff. They're going to have each other's back, and this is just a distractor. For us to look at, to talk about something other than the fact that of the Jaguars and their struggles.
Yeah, and listen, as far as I'm concerned, what I've been able to notice, Leonard's really the only one who can kind of get after Jalen. Now, I don't follow all these players on social media. I follow only a couple of them. I no longer am allowed to follow Jalen Ramsey, but Leonard has fun with Jalen, particularly with things he does off the field, the way he dresses, the way he acts, they have that type of relationship. As you pointed out, Leon, we're all aware of what was being said about Fournette while he missed time. I mean, it goes back, unfortunately, to the whole Fragile Fred situation when Fred Taylor couldn't play. They're calling him Fragile Fournette. They're questioning this guy. Why isn't he out there? By posting this and saying what he said on Instagram, does it take some of those fans that are kind of leaning either way towards Leonard Fournette? And does something like this bring them back in, or do you have to wait until Sunday until you win a football game for that to happen?
I'm going to go with option C, winning. Winning cures all, winning fixes all. Winning is the only resolution for losses.
I agree.
Fair enough?
I agree. I totally agree. I'm trying to figure out last year when this team was winning games, I mean, how many of us were paying attention to their tweets and Instagram posts back then?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because their performance on the field spoke volumes for themselves. We didn't have to go on Instagram and Twitter to figure out, you know, where the team's mentality was or where their focus was because they were winning football games. Winning cures all. It does. It really cures all. Once they get a couple of wins, you know, all this goes away. But until they get a win, this type of stuff is going to be a distraction, and we're going to talk about anything other than the fact that we're on a 5-game losing streak and we need a win desperately.
All right, much more to do today as far as the Jaguars. Again, injuries on that offensive line. Here comes the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that the Jaguars were able to knock off twice a season ago. And, you know, all of a sudden you turn some things around and you look at what is on tap this weekend where Pittsburgh is a favorite to come in here and win a football game. The Steelers are really playing some solid football. And now all of a sudden you've got to fix things here in a very short period of time, go out there and try to upset the Steelers back at home here in Jacksonville.
Now let's go off the edge with Yannick Ngakoue. Brought to you by Center State Bank, Dick's Wings and Grill, and Island Doctors.
All right, he is with us, Yannick Ngakoue, on this Tuesday. It's Midday Chalk. Rick Ballew, Lauren Rue, and Leon Searcy. Yannick, thanks for the time.
Appreciate you having me.
Yeah.
As always.
Yep, solid effort. You know, you guys had a chance. First things first, but what happened? Halftime adjustments, things that were made. You guys looked like a completely different team in the final 30 minutes of play on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. We just came back out with a different fire, and guys were just on their assignments. You know, first half, we had a couple missed assignments on the defensive side of the ball, and just came back in the second half to try to clean things up.
Oh, Yannick, Leon Searcy here. Hey, you got the Pittsburgh Steelers coming in this week. You're going up against one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. What is your plan of attack as a defensive lineman going up against this Pittsburgh Steelers offensive lineman team on Sunday?
You know, just definitely doing the same things we did last year, just trying to attack edges and, you know, just make sure we put pressure in Big Ben's face. You know, he's not a very mobile quarterback. A bigger quarterback that likes to step up and stand in the pocket. So, you know, just apply more pressure in the space like we did last year.
Yannick, we started the conversation out yesterday and today talking about social media and some of the tweets that have been sent. Jalen yesterday talks about being gone. People are going to miss him. What do you think he meant by that?
Oh, I'm not even sure. I never even heard of that. I'm not really on social media. I'm really on Instagram. So, never heard about that tweet.
Yeah. You know, Just overall, Yannick, you mentioned miscommunication and what is happening right now defensively. What did happen in that situation? I mean, I know you guys were in a 3-deep zone or, you know, each covering a third of the field. And you know, was it miscommunication by one player? Was something not called that was correct? Do you know exactly what took place on some of those big plays that Indianapolis was able to make?
Well, I was just saying, man, like all of the guys, you know, just two missing components in the defense, just two coverages, just balling, messed up miscommunication, you know, in the back end. But at the end of the day, that happens. It's football, and just got to recover and just got to make sure that we don't make those same mistakes next week.
Yannick, you've lost five in a row. There's a lot of distractions going on outside of football. What is going on in the locker room? What is your mindset moving forward the next seven games left in the season?
You know, just continue to be a leader, continue to just keep guys rallied up and focused. You know, anything can happen. You can win seven straight, but it's just all about your mindset, all about how you approach it and not giving up, you know, having that same enthusiasm and energy in practice and having that same mindset and focus coming into the building, starting with meetings. So, you know, it's just all about yourself being a pro, a true pro, and the true pro never gives up.
Yannick, does this team have a winning mindset?
Yeah, I would definitely say we're trying to gain that identity back, and it definitely just starts at the beginning of the week and starting from the breakdown, the game plans, and just getting familiarized with the scheme that we're going to run against this team this week. So, you know, everybody just has to have trust in each other to get the job done.
How hard has this been? I mean, you have a lot of pride. That defense has a ton of pride. And you know, these last 6 weeks where you've lost five in a row, you've had a bye, just the day-to-day work or grind in the building. How humbling has this been?
Yeah, man, definitely humbling from coming from the season we had last year. And, you know, you definitely wanted the same results as last year, but, you know, you can still try to finish it out strong and, you know, never know what can happen. So definitely a humbling experience, you know, facing adversity, but we all face adversity to something that gets success. So,
you need a lot of people and a lot of athletes are creatures of habit and do things the same way, maybe without even knowing it. But when you go through a losing streak like this, is there anything you personally switch up to try to kind of get just a different feel of approaching games?
No, just trying to – well, all I can do is just try to bring that same energy and practice and try to make it contagious. You know, energy is contagious, and if guys are focused and putting their all in all into it, then hopefully we can get the results that we need this Sunday.
You know, I had a good look at you and Calais and others very late in the game on Sunday where you thought that Green was down and the ball was down and that it wasn't going to be turned over. Just, you know, what your opinion on the fact that, you know, here's a guy who's been so little used around here. He makes a nice play, then he coughs it up, but with an opportunity to go in and win it, and then you watch that thing leave the way that it did. You know, your thoughts then and now carrying that in now to get prepared for such a good football team like the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You just got to let it go. You know, that's in the past now. Happened on Sunday. Just got to move forward. We got to learn from our mistakes. And, you know, just go back to the drawing board, get ready and prepared.
All right, on the flip side, some more injuries. I mean, boy, your offensive line, I know you're a defensive guy, but your offensive line is beaten up. You did get some good news, the return of Leonard Fournette. You know, you're just your overall opinion there on what Fournette can hopefully do here in the last seven games.
Yeah, man, he definitely brings, you know, a different edge to our offense and brings a different type of switch up for us. So you can play it honest. You got to play the run honest. You got to play the pass honest. So, you know, it's great having him as an asset coming back and, you know, just moving forward from there.
Yannick, I don't know if you pay attention to betting lines. I wouldn't expect you to or think differently either way if you do or don't. But right now that you guys are an underdog at home, 5.5 points. Going from the hunted now back to being the hunter, is there a mindset that changes throughout the season when you've now become an underdog at home?
Yeah, you just got to continue to have that same hunger and that same mentality, you know, that we brought in last year. So I'm kind of excited, you know, to be in this position because I just want to see who really wants it.
Yeah, well, the final one for me. You got one?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, final one, Unique. And I, speaking with Calais, he said it. If you just, you know, the ball bounces the right way, you get this one, he believes that it would begin to, you know, run downhill for you guys and you'd be able to pull off a string of victories, and it nearly happened a couple of days ago. Is that the culture right now? Is that the thinking of this team moving forward, or is there a little bit of regress that, boy, we've really left some games out there on the field?
No, Calais is absolutely right. Just got to get that win, and, you know, they'll start rolling in from there. Like I said, energy and winning is contagious.
Well, Unique, you're at home this week. I know the Jaguar fans are like you. They certainly want a victory. We'll see what happens Sunday here against the Steelers. And then we'll talk with you next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Unique Ngakoue each and every week joins us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Just, you know, I find it very interesting that now that we're in the social media era, that it doesn't matter if it's college, see my Florida State Seminoles, or here the town that we do cover, the Jacksonville Jaguars, when you're losing, culture is about the first thing that is always being mentioned.
Yeah, the culture of winning or losing is always that matters. And right now, unfortunately, the Jaguars have a culture of losing five straight right now. Somehow that's got to change. Their mindset has got to change moving forward with these next seven games going on. And Lauren had mentioned, asked Yannick something, what is he going to change that's going to be different, that's going to help them? Because it's got to be individuals. Each individual on that football team has got to change their culture or their mindset towards winning. And whatever they've been doing in the last 8 to 9 weeks, they need to change it. It's crazy for them to think that they can continue on with the same mm-hmm. mindset that they had, because it has constituted losing.
Right.
So whatever you've been doing, you need to change it so you can start winning.
What do they say the definition of insanity is? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I was hoping that the bye week, with each person on the team would do some soul searching, you know. And for the most part, I think offensively we did. We played better. Blake played better. We didn't turn the ball over. Defensively, I don't know what was happening defensively. But you've got to stop the bleeding. Somebody's got to put a Band-Aid on this bleeding that we've been doing over the last 5 weeks.
Off the Edge with Yannick Ngakoue is brought to you by Dick's Wings and Grill, Center State Bank, and Island Doctors.
I think all three of those apply. I'm hungry right now.
Yes.
I'd like to have some cash, and I feel like I need more meds. I need to see a doctor right now to try to keep positive energy flowing through this city. I hate it. I hate it for our listeners. I hate it for the people out there that maybe may not love their job or their life. I mean, losing has such an effect on me, and we've talked about that before. Lauren, you and I have had long conversations about it. Leanne, I know it has an effect on you as a player and now as a former player, but it has effect on our listening audience, man. It's amazing. A W or an L on Saturday or Sunday really changes the way you think going through the work week.
Some of you have reached out on Twitter and given your response to the social media topic, reading in. Listen, this is for everyone to decipher. If you have a public open account, you kind of open yourself up to the world to put things out there and let people figure out what you're saying without, I guess, coming out and actually saying whatever you mean to say. Cameron tweets us, @Lauren_Rue. It's totally a response to Jalen's bipolar dig at the city. Pause for just a moment. Instagram post, if you're just joining us, from Leonard Fournette. It's a picture of him celebrating, rolling the dice. And he says, I'm here with you guys. I'm sticking through this. I got you, all these things. I'm not going anywhere. Something along those lines, right? So we tried to figure out, once again, what everybody's trying to say without, I guess, saying it. So Cameron believes that response is a response to Jalen's bipolar dig at the city. He clearly stated he's not switching sides. It's not just a distraction. Jesus. I don't know what Jesus has to do with it, but okay.
Chip
says, I don't believe these tweets were being written last year. They were too busy caught up in the media love. Now they want to defend themselves from naysayers.
It's too much guesswork. I mean, going back to Jalen's tweet of 3-4 weeks ago about, we all know what it is, but I can't say it, to A.J. Boye before the game, to Jalen Ramsey, and now Leonard Fournette after the game. And, oh, by the way, Jalen responded today in a very positive fashion. Tad Dickman, you know, one of the higher-ups in the PR for the Jaguars. I like Tad an awful lot. Brought up the fact that, once again, that Jalen's having a five-bedroom home built here, and that he's not going anywhere. You know, it's almost as if you wish you could say to these guys, stay away from it. Stay away from social media. It does so much more harm than it really does good.
Just get back to football. That's the bottom line. All this trying to figure out encrypted codes and messages and all that kind of stuff. Just get back to playing the game of football, and that'll take care of it. Start winning, and all this goes away.
You know, Generation Z, as they call it.
Uh-oh. Are you going to pull a Mike Gundy on me here?
No, I'm not going to bring up liberalism. And I thought that
he went Generation Z, too.
The former Dr. Michael Savage, when he said liberalism is a mental disorder, one of my favorite talk radio hosts of all time, and, of course, that best-selling book. But, yeah, Mike Gundy went down that road, and he's getting crushed for making those particular comments. But it does amaze me just how important social media is. And I use Twitter for sports, period. That's it. Facebook, I post pictures of my kids, and I almost never go to it. So when I go to Facebook, for me, it's happy time. Pictures of my kids, everything's good. You go to Twitter, man, it is a walking battlefield. You do not know. I mean, most of the comments that come in are negative comments. And for our job, that's part of it. And I don't mind it. It can be humorous at times. Others, you're like, what did they just listen to? Did I really say that? Is that how they interpret it? But if I was a pro football player or a college football player, especially when my teams are losing, man, I would stay away from this stuff. Yep. I wouldn't go near it.
That's right. Well, Blake even came out and said when he did that piece with Mike Silver, we talked to Mike Silver about it a couple of weeks ago. He was on the program on Midday Chalk. Blake even came out and said, I had to get rid of all of that. I mean, I had to get rid of the social media platforms because, let's be honest, he probably got so much crap. It was overwhelmingly more than that I would assume positive. So he gets rid of it. His mom is calling him saying, did you see what they said about you? And he's like, no, because I don't want to see that stuff anymore, and you don't need to look at it either. I mean, it cannot be anything, unless you're a person, Leon, who takes a chip and is like, you know what, I'm going to take this for good and turn this and prove all these people wrong. I can't see how this is beneficial.
Well, I'm not on Twitter, so I'm going to ask you all this question. Do you think today's players care more about being liked now that they're on social media?
Yeah, I do.
Seems
that way.
There used to be a badge of honor, in my opinion, almost a term of endearment to be considered a heel, to be considered a bad guy in the NFL. Now, you know, I grew up, I heard about the game. I heard about Ray Nitzke and Alan Page and Dick Butkus. And, you know, I tweeted out last night when they showed OBJ, and it was a wide receiver from the San Francisco 49ers, pre-game dancing. I mean, they're getting ready to face each other for 60 minutes, and they're dancing. And my only tweet last night was, can you imagine what LT and Ronnie Lott must be thinking when they see this? And, of course, you know who came in? The millennials, the Generation X's, and Generation Z's going to say, oh, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with these guys doing this before the game. It's not about hate. They're professionals. They're allowed to do it. Okay, well, obviously they're allowed to do it. They did it, but my whole spiel again is they never used to do things like this. The game has changed. I mean, is winning as important now as it used to be? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. We'll continue to discuss it. As a matter of fact, the winning mindset of the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Lunch with Leon, brought to you by BioWorks Pharmacy and Wingstop on 1010XL.
You got the Pittsburgh Steelers coming in this week. You're going up against one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. What is your plan of attack as a defensive lineman going up against this Pittsburgh Steelers offensive lineman on team on Sunday?
You know, just definitely doing the same things we did last year, trying to attack edges and, you know, just make sure we put pressure in Big Ben's face. You know, he's not a very mobile quarterback. A bigger quarterback that likes to step up and stand in the pocket. So, you know, just apply more pressure in the space like we did last year.
Couple of ex-Gators on that offensive line. Marcus Gilbert, Marquise Pouncey. Then you got David DeCastro, Ramon Foster. And, of course, Al Villanueva.
Villanueva.
And that was Yannick Ngakoue. He joins us every Tuesday in the 12:10 time slot here on Midday Chalk. Brought to you by Island Doctors, Dick's Wings and Grill, and Center State Bank.
Bringing some violence to the football field is Yannick Ngakoue. We hope that continues on Sunday. We're going to talk about winning mindset here in a moment. You just play a commercial from Rudy, the movie?
Yeah, there's a thing coming to the Florida Theater, maybe in Daly's Place.
No, it's Daly's Place. Have you not heard about this, Rick?
Well, I was just wondering because I saw it in as early as like the third quarter. Notre Dame had 11 Rudys on the field Saturday night against Florida State, and now he's going to be here. He's a well-traveled man.
Yeah, well, they're playing the like a symphony version of
the soundtrack. Yes.
Oh, there's a musical.
While the movie's going on, right? Oh. Is that right? They're gonna, or are you just gonna sit there and listen to the music, or are they playing the movie and then the orchestra will play the?
I gotcha.
Soundtrack? I think I've screwed that up, but I think I got most of the parts right.
I'm totally out. I just don't know what is
it's
going.
The soundtrack
on.
To Rudy. It's the soundtrack right. to Rudy.
Because
and
I
this,
yeah.
This is why when Notre Dame's back on top, this type of stuff happens.
Well, I tell you, I mean, I was watching the game and I was stone sober.
allegedly. But I remember early in that third quarter, I mean, Notre Dame's defensive line, they had guys out there that were about 5'8", 210 pounds. and Florida State's offensive line couldn't even move those 11 Rudys.
They had their walk-ons on. Oh, my God. That's a shame.
It was really bad, and it continues to be bad for the Noles. We'll get to some college football in a little bit. But you might have left yesterday. You were already gone when I said it. You know, I have predicted Florida State to knock off Florida in two Saturdays.
What's in your cup right there?
Well, not
I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. I'm laying it all on the line.
Listen, you're a former alumni. I mean, you're.
Right.
I
who's
would expect
been known
nothing
to be too hard on my.
Yes.
School. Not too gentle,
no,
always too hard.
I do not see. I'm not, you know, I'm a Hurricane. I don't bet on the Gators for anything, but mm-hmm. I just don't see y'all beating the Gators.
No one does. I want to be the only one that I know who picks Florida State. I think this is going to be nearly unanimous from Key West to Pensacola. I think every single person in this state is going to pick Florida to beat Florida State in a week and a half. Rue, I'm going the other way. I'm taking the Noles.
I know it. You made it very clear yesterday.
And I'm calling in sick Monday if they lose.
You are?
Yes. Mm.
Okay. Make a note of that. That might be the greatest Monday we'll have so far. The best Monday show we've ever had.
Greatest for me, too, despite the loss.
Fair enough. Let's talk about a winning mindset, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about culture. We use that term so much. You have to have the culture. You have to have the mindset to know how to win. Let's explore that, if you will, a little further. I had a conversation last night with my husband, and I asked him what.
First of all, congratulations. Most wives and husbands that I know no longer talk to one another. So
yeah, it doesn't happen.
You got
very
that
out
of everyone else. Congratulations, Lauren.
Thank you very much. I'll take that. I still talk to you guys more than I talk to him on a daily basis. But anyway, last night we had a conversation, and I talk about this all day long, and I listen to you, and I listen to the other people on this radio station, and I asked him, what does he think the problem is with this team? Everybody seems to have an opinion. Surely he has one. And from his former athlete perspective, Leon, he said the biggest thing about winning, if you've got the talent, the other huge part of this is the mindset. You look at other examples. You look at the Houston Texans, who started their season 0-3 and found a way, because one way or the other, had a mindset of knowing either what it was like to win or what it takes to win, but had every reason to lay down and die and have a horrible first half of the season for sure, and then maybe be in the same situation the Jags are in the second half, but they didn't, Leon. And if it's a question of knowing how to win, figuring out how to win, or just approaching the game week after week with the anticipation of what it's that feeling of the mindset of knowing what it's like to win and how you get there. It's something that maybe other people take for granted. You have never been on
A losing team
in his collegiate or professional career, 11 years in the league, has never been on a losing team.
Yeah.
How is that possible, Leon?
I don't know. I've been blessed, very blessed, very blessed. But listen, the one thing about the culture of winning, I've always been a Jaguars fan, and I looked at them prior to Tom Coughlin getting here. And it was just losing after losing and losing. So when they hired Tom Coughlin, I knew the culture of losing was going to change because I was underneath his regime. And being underneath Tom Coughlin's regime meant that certain things he wasn't going to settle for. He was not going to allow the locker room or the playing field to be a country club environment. So when they had Tom Coughlin here as the president of football operations, I knew he was going to change the culture. That was going to be from the coaching staff to the trainers to everybody, the players he selected, the draft, everything. So when I saw the success of the team last year, I saw Tom Coughlin's fingerprints on that. And in the guys, the way they played, how they played offense, how they played defense, they ran the ball, they played sound defense. Moving forward into this year, I'm concerned because all the expectations of this team moving forward to being a Super Bowl contender, to being at a point where they are right now, I'm wondering what happened from a year ago to this year,
right,
as far as the culture of winning goes. And let me
interrupt you for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Is it truly a switch from becoming the hunter to the hunted, a term that maybe gets overused, but being the dark horse that people didn't expect, and then you jump up and you win some games, and then before you know it, you're playing in the AFC Championship game. There should be there's a shift in going from that to now all eyeballs are on you.
Well, I'm looking at this season. I'm saying to myself, maybe the Jaguars don't know how to handle prosperity. They don't know how to handle being the front runner or the elite team. Right? Maybe they play better as the dog that hunts instead of the dog that's being hunted. So, but what you got to do as a team, you've got to switch it up. And I know when I was with the Jaguars in 96, we had the losing streak that we did. We, as an offensive line, we did things different. We switched up. We hung out. We went to dinner together, or we went to the house to watch film together, or we stayed after and did some extra reps on the field. Whatever you need to do as a team, as a unit, do it. And switch it up a little bit, because whatever you've been doing the first 8 to 9 weeks hasn't worked. So you got to switch it up. You got to do something different to turn this thing around. And it's not the big thing. It's the little things that you got to do as a unit to switch it up to make, you know, don't make, you know, to not get caught in this culture of losing that they've been doing for the last couple of weeks.
Then after the win, you'd have a big party over at Kevin Hardy's house.
There you go. Absolutely. 7,500 square feet. We go there and party, man, after the game.
The place was amazing. You know, listen, I picked them to go to the Super Bowl, okay? So I bought it, and I'm not going to backtrack on that. I'm not going to try to hide from that. But I also, during the entire offseason, and neither of you two were with me at the time, but Sticks, you'll remember this, that I constantly brought up that this team has gone from negative press to positive press. They had been losing forever, okay? The end of the Jack Del Rio era, the Mike Mularkey one season, the Gus Bradley nightmare. Losing, losing, losing. Then all of a sudden you win these games. You come within 5 minutes of going to a Super Bowl, and bam, all of a sudden the NFL Network's talking about you. ESPN's talking about you. Everyone's writing stories about you. And anything that's being said, Sticks, is positive. So I remember throwing that question out all the time. How would the Jaguars handle positive news clippings?
They've obviously not handled it very well, but I think the question that I have is, I kind of come from a different line of thinking, and maybe Leon could answer this. What does the positive news clippings do on Sunday? Does it affect the route running? Does it affect the offensive line blocking? I would say no. So I think that we kind of maybe overstate the positive press clippings going to the head of the players. Maybe they are not taking as much of a studious approach where they're watching film and taking notes as much as last year. That could be something, but in terms of their ability, it's the same guys on the field, right?
Yeah, well, I tell you what. Well, I could just give you an example of what we did. We stayed away from positive or negative, to be quite honest with you. We trying to stay even keel as an offensive line. I mean, listen, we had some greats on that. I mean, but of course, Baselli was one of the all-time greats, and he was going to get his clippings. I got mine every now and then. But we tried to do the best we could to stay away from the negative or the positive and just stay on an even keel, because we knew the ultimate goal was to get in the playoffs, to win a division, and win the division championship, and then hopefully participate and win a Super Bowl. So we tried to stay away from it. Now, we had guys, you know, because when we had guys like maybe Wydell or Brian DeMarco who weren't getting their fair share of good press, and they would attack the media, da-da-da, whatever. But, you know, as far as a unit goes, we tried to stay on the even keel, whether it was positive or negative, because we knew that ultimately the offensive line had to have success if the team was going to have success. So we tried to stay away from it either way. So we didn't let it influence our play either way.
And I remember at one point, Wydell called me the paparazzi. Brian DeMarco, when he didn't play well, didn't like it. I remember that another time with Wydell where he was called some things by members of another team, and he showed me a list of what he was called. He was ready to give me the list and have me announce it on the radio. Then he flagged me down and said, nah. He thought about it again and said, nah. I don't even want you to. And obviously I couldn't have mentioned any of those words because they were involved with some bad language. But I found it interesting in that point how you really could stay away from the media. Again, I don't want to blame today's social media, but there were guys like you that just basically stayed away from it, because I know that there were others that had members of this local media labeled. I remember them calling Mike Bianchi hit-and-run Bianchi. Bianchi would drop a scud about something in the mid-90s that this football team didn't do well on the field, and then he wouldn't show up in the locker room for a week. And I remember some of the run-ins with Prisco. And, you know, I had a few in the day where I took far more liberties and chances then than I do now. But certain guys knew everything that was going on. Others, it seemed as though they didn't even care.
Yeah, I didn't care either way.
Going to the text line, driven by Duval Ford from the 704 area code. Frankly, I think all of you are the ones who are fueling the fire over the players' social media posts. Be a leader and stay positive about the team.
Well, do we need to bring back Jessica Blaylock, who picks them every week regardless of who they're playing?
84-10, Jaguars.
Yeah. Blaylock, I think, in her career, picked the Jaguars to go like 98-0 or whatever it was. You call them the way that you see them, but let's the criticism that's the point I made a week ago, and I don't know if it went in one ear and out the other, but everyone becomes a victim of this team losing football games.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself
being blamed for, being responsible for.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, but I find myself now that Florida State sucks and that the Jaguars are struggling. I receive a hell of a lot more criticism now this year than I was a year ago at this time, even though Florida State had quit on Jimbo. You know where I'm going with this. When the team loses, the fans are so angry that they get more intense to basically everyone they talk. I love it when people say, oh, Blue, you know nothing. You thought they'd go to the Super Bowl. And I just move right along. I'm not even going to try to defend it.
Yeah.
You're right. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. I was wrong.
It's interesting because if we as sports talk radio hosts try to do what the listeners want us to do rather than just being who we are, and I think all three of us in this room and Tyler as well, when we have the mic in front of us, I'll speak for all of us. You tell me if I'm wrong here, guys, though. We speak from our experiences and we speak from what we think is the case. We are who we are. I personally don't rotate from opinion to opinion based on what I think the audience wants to hear. So if that texter can find something to be positive about and still support this team as they should as a fan, then absolutely. I mean, that's the place for it. But personally, I don't believe my job is to sunshine pump if I don't think there's anything to sunshine pump. I hate talking about what athletes tweet and what they say on Instagram. And if you're yelling back on the radio, then don't do it. That's not really how this works. So,
but that's where we're headed. It's more and more and more of
it. Well, it is when you lose. It is when you lose five in a row and people are dropping like flies and these comments are being made on top of all of that. That's again, this is the reality of being 3-6 and losing five straight and not figuring out how to win when you had the opportunity now, essentially 2 weeks in a row. Different scenarios or two games in a row.
I just think fans don't like excuses. You know, I think they would be, and they don't want it overdone as well. If that makes any sense, they don't want it's all on me. Everything is on me. Okay, the guys are out late partying in London. That's on me. Miscommunication with my safety and my linebacker, and is Jalen Ramsey freelancing? Is he playing man to man when the rest of the defense is in zone? That's on me. I think it goes both ways. They don't want too many excuses, injuries, whatever. They also don't want too much of, oh, no, blame it all on me. Somehow, somewhere, if you're not winning games, it's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's got to be a happy medium between the coach and the players. And unfortunately, we're hearing more from the coach responding to the fact that it's on him and less from the players, because the players seem to be, you know, not saying that they're okay, but they need to take a little bit more responsibility for a lot of their breakdowns. And I'm not sure if they did or not, but the culpability has got to be on the coaching and the players as well. So that loss against Indy was a little bit of both.
That whole culture issue, again, it comes up no matter it's college or pro. I mean, that's one of the first things you always hear. It is the culture. And again, I think that is fairly new. It's expanded because of the social media side of things. This would drive me crazy if I was a coach. I would, but you can't tell these guys they can't be on it. And I don't think you can tell college kids that you can't be on it. Jimbo Fisher did. I wonder if it hurt him in recruiting. These kids want to be on social media.
I just could not imagine a Jimmy Johnson back in the day addressing the media about some kind of tweet or Instagram post. I couldn't imagine.
But the other
version. If you guys had social media in the late 80s, early 90s, you would have been you would have been blackballed. You would have had the freaking death penalty, Leon Searcy.
But the other version of that, though, Leon, is speaking to the media, right?
Yeah.
And that has gotten the access that some teams have and some reporters have seems to be getting smaller and smaller. Different places have different rules, and coaches implement whatever they see fit in college, but the availability is smaller and smaller. So I guess the reverse to that would be if Jimmy Johnson had to have a conversation with a bunch of guys who spoke to reporters and said too much or were caught on video doing things in the background of B-roll, somebody there doing something, and they're like, man, you can't be doing that stuff. People are watching.
I can tell you this for sure, that would never happen on his watch. Just I'm just telling
because
you.
Because why?
Because the culture at the University of Miami back then, I mean, Coach Johnson laid it on the line first and foremost that, you know, your scholarship was on fire each and every day. I just tell you what, there would be more guys, it would be 98% of the guys on the team that would adhere to whatever. If he told you to stay off social media, I guarantee you 98% of the guys would stay off social media. And the guys who did go on social media, they won't be at the University of Miami anymore.
Well, and that's the difference, right, from going to amateur athletics to professional. In amateur athletics, the coach has the power to say all these things and say, we're not going to play you. Very rarely do you see in the NFL a guy flex his muscle enough to say, I'm tired of you doing all this crap, and I'm sending a message, and I'm not playing you.
Yeah, there should be a difference.
I mean, there's a disconnect there.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's more.
And I'm asking you a question. Is that a findable offense if you say something on social media that's conduct detrimental to the team? Is that findable?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would think it would. We asked
care?
About the AJ Boye comments.
We're assuming that the Jaguars front office cares that this is happening. Are we making an assumption that's incorrect?
No, they care because they've lost five in a row. They care because it's noise outside of the system. Now, Doug Marrone, Tom Coughlin, Dave Caldwell, I imagine they had no clue about any of this, but it was brought to their attention because it became a news story, and the PR staff tried to put out that fire. The best way to put out the fire is to win the game. They didn't win the game, so it manifests a little bit. You can't eliminate this in the college world. It may hurt you in recruiting.
That's
again, this me generation, this Generation Z, have you seen what they're doing now? They're lockers in college football. Have you seen what is going on at these blue blood programs? I mean, it's all about keeping up with the other. Indoor facility.
And then,
lockers, everything else that you can't. Not you can't say you're not allowed on social media anymore if the school you're competing against to does allow.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, if this mindset, this idea of me first, is being essentially taught or is being developed at a collegiate level, what the hell do you think happens when they get to the NFL? It doesn't change, does it?
No,
if you're
it doesn't.
A me guy from the beginning, now you go to a place where it's even more rampant or more allowed because nobody essentially can tell you what to do on that level.
Well, that's why you spend all that money on scouting to try to figure out that character flaw or whether or not you're a great teammate.
And also, if you got a coach or a team that's muffling a guy and telling him to stay out, that does hurt recruiting because if you got these socially accessible lockers that they have now, where they got the social media, a kid is going to want that and want to see that. And if a coach is muffling that, then a kid may not want to go to that school.
You know, I had something come through last night when I was watching Monday Night Football and I was going through Twitter and I follow Florida State football and I imagine that the guy who runs, guy or gal, runs a Florida State football on Twitter is probably a young individual. And I'm thinking it has been such a disaster over there. Yet they come out with this deal about the uniforms it was about a 20-25 second video. The uniforms that they're going to be wearing this week against BC. And again, got the players kind of doing all the swag and not necessarily dancing, but the swag and the look. And I'm just sitting there on the Lazy Boy, sipping a Jameson, saying, this team can't win a football game. Yet this is what they are sending out to the Florida State people. And it sucks. It's awful. But that's the new generation. That is the people that you have to hit. They don't care about me sitting on a Lazy Boy. They're trying to get to the person who's on a computer watching Netflix and checking their cell phone all at the same time. They're doing three things at one time. That's the audience that they're going for. And, you know, again, it was disappointing, but they don't care what I think. They care what the 24-year-old kid thinks.
I want to take this conversation, a piece of it, and bring it back and tie it in with whatever we're going to next, which is essentially, should we have seen this coming? Rick has some thoughts on that. And I want to know, Leon, is culture easier changed on the collegiate level or the professional level? Is it easier to expect a college team to be able to change the culture or an NFL team to do it? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Midday Chalk on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Lunch with Leon. Brought to you by BioWorks Pharmacy and Wingstop on 1010XL.
Got a sore back today. All these pharmacy ads and what have you. I need some meds. Typically, I just need something to brighten myself up a little bit when I got to deal with you, Lauren Rue, for 3 hours.
I figured your back hurt because you've just been carrying this program for so long. And
there it is. We're going to get you a massage chair. How about that?
My goodness.
Don't help him at all.
Obviously, you're on social media. You're hearing what the police are saying. A massage, did you mention?
Yeah, a massage chair.
Oh, I thought you were offering to give Rick a massage.
Hell no.
I thought maybe you knew that Zach Smith knew about. And
no, not do that.
You were kind of leading me in that direction. Yeah. I was all ears here.
Jeez. All right, we're going to take a left turn very quickly here. I posed a question going into the break, Leon. Is it easier or is it, I guess easier is the right word, to expect the culture to change in a quicker amount of time, or whether it's in the middle of a season or wherever, you pick the time frame, but is it easier to change a culture on the collegiate level or in an NFL type setting?
Well, I tell you what, it's all about if you buy into the coach and the belief that you could turn things around. That's my take on it. I mean, you've got to buy in that somehow, you know, our destination is that we could turn this thing around and still succeed.
And is that message easier received or better received when you're still an amateur athlete versus getting paid? Or does it just depend on who the guy delivering the message is?
It just depends on who the guy is or whatever. I mean – you have to buy into the coach. You have to buy into, you know, what he's trying to do. I tell you what, it would probably be a lot easier in college because, I mean, I guess with college, you know, the scholarships are, you know, 1 year renewable, and you know, guys that you don't feel that are a good fit to your program, you know, they won't be here, and you recruit other guys. More than likely in the NFL, I mean, some of these contracts and whatever, guys, you know, teams are locked into contracts, and if guys stinking it up, you know, you could cut them, but then you got to deal with all the cap numbers and all the other kind of crap that goes on with the NFL football. So I just believe that it depends on the message. And as a player, do you believe the message that's being said by whatever the coach is saying? And what past evidence is giving you the insightfulness that we can move forward and turn this thing around?
I think good coaching, the bad coaching is really so important in this transition, because the way I've always looked at it, even though we're surrounded by college football blue bloods, all of these schools have made mistakes. Miami, Florida, certainly now Florida State, as well as Georgia. The NFL is built under the salary cap where you shouldn't be bad for a long time. You shouldn't be the Cleveland Browns, okay? It's also built where you shouldn't be good for a long time. There shouldn't be a New England Patriots. As bad as things are right now for the Jacksonville Jaguars, they should be able to turn this thing around again in a year or two. That's the way the NFL is. That's the way this game is. Look at last night's game, final drive. Look at the Jaguars' loss on Sunday. What was it, a minute 12 left when that fumble did occur? But you got to have the right guys, and you got to have the right quarterback, and you got to have the right coach. And look at what Jeremy Pruitt's doing this year at Tennessee. Look at Dan Mullen has done this year at Florida. And then on the flip side, you look at what Willie Taggart can't do at Florida State, what Scott Frost can't do at Nebraska, what Chip Kelly can't do at UCLA. I think it's a quicker fix in pro football because of the salary cap.
Now, making those changes and acknowledging that you need to make some changes as part of what Dave Caldwell does, what Tom Coughlin does, with all those guys up there who at the end of the season have to make tough decisions or just figure out where this team is headed. And Rick, you brought up something that I think is kind of interesting. And the idea that was there enough done between the 2016 season and now?
Apparently now, no way. I mean, not nearly enough. And again, I bought in. I was totally fooled. But a year ago at this time, the narrative was Gus Bradley was the problem and the only problem. Get him out of here, add Tom Coughlin, and everything else will work. They didn't change the coaching staff as far as the offensive and defense coordinator. Brought in a couple of position coaches. We know that. Had another draft class, brought in some free agents. But did we overlook the fact that it was all on Gus Bradley, and now looking to where this football team is midway through 2018, should they have addressed things differently overall as a staff? Did they bring in the right type of players? And were we also fooled last year, Leon, because, you know, you took on Cleveland. You won a road game there. They were brutal. Houston didn't have Deshaun Watson. Andrew Luck didn't play in Indianapolis. I mean, there's five gimmies right there in a last-place schedule. Now, all of a sudden, this year, they're back, and you have a first-place schedule. So did we overlook all those factors?
Well, I think it had a lot. We're a little overconfident, I think, with the success that we had last year. I think there's a lot of things that we didn't address moving forward because we had so much success last year. I mean, we didn't address getting the back, getting the extra back. We saw that Leonard Fournette had injury issues last year, missed a couple of games. We should have brought in another back. Didn't address the quarterback position. Should have brought in another veteran quarterback. We should have addressed the wide receiver position. We talked last show about the fact that the ineffectiveness of the wide receiver. Do we have a number one receiver? Do we have a go-to receiver? As far as the tight end positions go, we let Marquise Lee go, one of our best blocking tight ends. We let him go, whatever, so we missed the tight end situation. So it's just so many different factors offensively, I think, for the most part, that we didn't address that we shouldn't address at the front office. And I think with the success that Blake Bortles had in the playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers and against the New England Patriots and the offense being effective, I think we oversighted some of the things. I can't forget about the offensive line. We have the offensive line issues. Maybe, you know, we go in there and get a veteran left tackle. I know Cam Robinson, you know, he had his struggles in the preseason. Maybe we should have brought in a veteran left tackle to if he get injured or anything like that. So I just think offensively, we missed the boat on some things that we should have addressed, but overall, I think it was overconfidence by the front office and this team.
Yeah, and, you know, that's fair at this point. It's tough in any business, especially tough, I got to believe, in athletics, to come into a situation with not your fingerprints being all over it. And what I mean by this is that Doug Marrone was promoted from within, but there were a ton of coaches who remained. Now, for all we know, Doug Marrone may have signed off on each and every one of those coaches. He may have recommended these coaches. He worked with a few of them, including Nate Hackett, while he was in Buffalo. But a guy like, you know, offensive line coach, Pat Flaherty, defensive back coach in Perry Fuel. Perry was here with Coughlin. Perry's been everywhere with Coughlin. Pat Flaherty was in Coughlin in New York. I'm just thinking out loud here. Where certain guys, all right, they're going to be here because Tom had him in New York, and should it have been done in a different way where, no, it's not just Gus Bradley. We got to get rid of everything because that era was built around losing and accepting the fact that they lost. Should they have cleaned house with the staff? I remember one of the biggest fires that they had was Jerry Sullivan, who was considered at that point one of the top wide receiver coaches in the National Football League. I think Keenan McCardell's done a wonderful job. I'm not going to sit here and say if Jerry Sullivan was the coach, Rashad Greene wouldn't have fumbled that ball. That's stupid. I'm not going that way. But again, we talk about culture and we talk about change. Looking back on it now, should they have made more changes when they promoted?
Well, you know what? That's easy to say now that we're losing.
Why I asked, did we overlook that fact?
You know, with all the success we had last year, I mean, that's a clear oversight as far as the coaching staff goes, because we had the success that we thought when we got rid of Gus Bradley and we kept with mass majority of the staff, guys that Tom Coughlin was comfortable with, you know, we went into the next season and we had success. So now is a question mark moving into this season because of what's going on now, the losing, the coach, the expectations of this team, not living up to the expectations of this team. So what you're going to do is you're going to look at the coaching. You're going to say, are these coaches motivating these guys? Are these coaches getting these guys in the proper position to where they can have success or whatever they like? So now, because we're losing, maybe now it's become a factor in the coaching staff because we're 3-6.
Today's show brought to you by Remedy. Coming up tomorrow, they have an open house. It's called Better Work Life Day. And through the Better Work Life Academy, they're offering up their associates free online courses through Penn Foster to build their skills and increase their salary potential. If this is something you're interested in, plus all the jobs that they have over there at Remedy, just stop by their office, or better yet, go to remedystaff.com or pull up the app at Remedy Staff. They help bring us the program on this Tuesday afternoon.
The offensive line has had, its fair share of problems, guys. And planning for the future has got to be something that's being discussed right now, coming off the news of Brandon Linder and his absence for the remainder of the season, and that rotating door of left tackles that seem to be ailing this team continuously. We'll discuss the future of this offensive line coming up next.
Lunch with Leon, brought to you by BioWorks Pharmacy and Wingstop on 1010XL.
There's a couple things I really liked, and then, you got to kind of, in the run game, I thought he did some good things. Pass pro wise, I knew his, once I found out his knee was bothering him, then, it's kind of tough to evaluate. But, we were happy to get him in there, and, Josh's foot, So, both those guys right now, we'll just see where they are. I expect them to be out there on Wednesday, but, we'll just see.
Yeah, I saw the Pro Football Focus grades on A.J. Cann and Jeremy Parnell and Josh Walker. Not great, particularly with Walker. He's allowed the third most pressures in the league in 294 snaps. He's allowed 33 pressures. I mean, the top is Julian Davenport with Houston. He's allowed 42 pressures, but he's played double the snaps. I mean, 544. Then the rookie in Oakland, the top draft pick, Colton Miller, 39 pressures and 554. So Josh Walker, not statistically speaking, and you can take what you want from Pro Football Focus, it doesn't measure up well there. However, the offensive line, kind of lost in everything now that is going on with this organization. You've lost your two best offensive linemen. Brandon Linder gone again, remainder of the year with a knee, and that'll come into play next year as rehabilitation. I mean, at what point will he be back? A torn ACL is different for every athlete. Still waiting on Cam Robinson, who obviously injured himself very early in the season. So you'll begin next year not knowing about your left tackle, not knowing about your center. You've addressed your left guard in Andrew Norwell. Leon, your right guard's a free agent in seven games in A.J. Cann. And then you've got a veteran, the oldest guy on the team, as a right tackle at 32, not named Calais Campbell, $6 million cap savings. If they cut him, he's got 1 year remaining at $6 million. Yeah. Point I'm making right now, four-fifths of the offensive line may not be there for the start of the season.
Yeah. And what's unfortunate for the Jaguars, the two positions that you don't want to lose are your center and your left tackle. And we've lost both of them. And we got to address some answers coming next year because, like you said, Parnell's going to be gone. He'll probably be gone next year. A.J. Cann is probably – he's expendable. Then you don't know what the situation with Linder's going to be, how effective he's going to be coming back with an ACL tear. You don't know if he's going to be back for many camps. You don't know if he's going to be back for the preseason. Can you factor him in at the start of the game next year? Then you got Cam Robinson, who's dealing with an ACL tear as well. Is he going to be back? Can he be back by preseason, by the start of the season? So there's definitely some issues within the offensive line that we definitely have to address, maybe in free agency and drafting guys, get some young talent in here that's going to help build this offensive line because, as you see, if the offensive line is ineffective, the offense is going to sputter. And we've sputtered on occasions because of our offensive line inability to run the ball and protect the passer. So we've got some issues next year that we definitely need to address from tackle to tackle, guard to guard, and at the center position.
Maybe they keep Parnell. 1 year to go, $6 million. That's really a bargain for a starting right tackle. You begin to groom Richardson, who's yet to see the field this year, inactive many games, now in the IR. Maybe you can make that transition there. That eliminates a position. If Cam gets healthy, if Linder gets healthy, if all these things do come in that way, then you're really only looking at right guard. But
yeah.
That's a big if.
It is. It is a big. I'd just like to see some young talent on this team, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, we went and got Andrew Nowell. We signed him to the big contract. We got Linder. You signed him to a big contract. You got some young talent at Cam Robinson. He still needs to be developed. His game is not at par where it needs to be. But at the right side of the offensive line, you know, it'd be good to get some young talent in there. I mean, Parnell has done an adequate job for the most part this year. But do you want to pay a right tackle $6-7 million moving forward next year? Then AJ Can, he's been up and down. I've been watching his play. He's been up and down. You could put a young talent in there at right guard right there and play him at right guard. So, you know, the Jaguars, I'd like to see him go get some fresh young talent for next year.
We talk about watching quarterbacks on the collegiate level and kind of keeping an eye on those guys, assuming that the Jags will make some kind of move this coming draft in that area. But as far as offensive line goes, Leon, there's a collegiate program right now that you could cherry pick guys from. Where would you go?
Offensive line? Alabama, Wisconsin, LSU. I like their offensive line. Any team that's running the ball effectively, I like to look at road graders. Then I look at road graders first, and then I look at teams that are having success passing the ball. I look at tackles. How effective are they run blocking and pass protecting? You know, Wisconsin has a built-in reputation that they have. They build good offensive linemen in Wisconsin. I mean, you can look at their history from guards to tackle and even centers. They have good offensive linemen. Alabama as well. Alabama, I'm sure they're going to have good guard. They got good coaches. You know, they got good development programs for offensive linemen. So I would start probably with Wisconsin or Alabama.
Yeah. You know, those Midwest schools, man. I mean, Iowa, Purdue, Minnesota. I mean, schools that don't strike you as, you know, stop and stare type of schools, mm-hmm. always produce good offensive line. Georgia's got a lot of very good young offensive linemen if they reach their potential. I think you got to bring up Notre Dame, even though they lost two first rounders off that offensive line a year ago. That offensive line the other night looked scary. Speaking of scary, 4 years remain on the deal for Brandon Linder. I mean, here's a silent leader, a captain, but a guy who has not been able to stay healthy throughout the course of
what,
really
which injuries
any season.
Have plagued him, Rick?
Oh, you name it, lower body. I mean, he's had it. He's had several injuries. I it's been every year, Tyler. Has it always been lower body, or do you have a shoulder?
Well, I know last year, in the middle of the season, I know for sure the Pittsburgh game, he had mono. Mono kept him out for a lot last year.
That kept him out as well. I mean, this is one of those guys where you got to start to wonder, is he ever going to be fully healthy where he can give you 16 games? I mean, he signed a year ago, mid-July. A contract extension, 5 years, worth $51,700,000. And look at these numbers. Next year, $6 million. 2020, $8 million. 2021, $9 million. 2022, $10 million. Now, no dead money, but you want to sacrifice cutting him, and, you know, you sacrifice that money, 6, 8, 9, and 10, respectively, $24 million of it is guaranteed. So, they're going to rehab him and try to get him ready. It doesn't make any sense to part ways with Brandon Linder at this point in his career. I want to say he's only, 27, 28 mm-hmm. years of – he's 26 years of age.
Yeah, but you can still go draft a young center as well to back him up just for, you know, just for insurance purposes.
All our thought has been on the defense. How are they going to afford Malik? How are they going to afford Darius? How are they going to afford Calais? Now, all of a sudden, you know, it's obvious with the eye test that Barry Church – has really slipped. I mentioned him prominently before the trade deadline. Would they consider moving him to a playoff contending team, free up some cash, and play a youngster? Well, it looks like, you know, I'd be surprised if Church returns next year. This is why this job is difficult. And this is just a couple of examples that I'm giving you about the Jaguars, but every team deals with this. And this is why you should be able to win in this league, and you should never be down for this long. We just gave you a scenario here with the Jaguars. Every team in the division and every team in this league. Look at what Deion Lewis said about going on the cheap to New England after the game on Sunday. New England goes to the cheap. They refuse to play Deion Lewis. That has always been New England's way. It was Pittsburgh's way forever when you came here. Look at all the free agents who left the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 90s alone because the Rooney family wasn't going to pay that contract extension.
Yeah, I left. Carnell Lake left. Woodson, Kirkland, Lloyd.
Andre Hastings left.
Andre Hastings.
He got paid.
Yeah, he did get paid. He did get paid.
You guys had a lot of players who up and left, and that was just the philosophy of the organization.
Lunch with Leon is every day here on Midday Chuck. Leon joins us from the top of the show till about the 1:30 time slot. And we always kind of poke fun at Leon for what he brings in all good fun, of course, what he brings in for a snack. Today, I mean, he's kind of tamed it down with almonds and orange juice. But our food conversation is going to switch to you today, Rick.
Oh, really?
This is our Tuesday check-in. How's the fasting going?
It's not going too well, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that my football teams are losing. And as I said,
because you want to emotionally eat to make you feel
better. Yeah, I mean,
better.
I complain massively about my teams losing. I really don't complain much about anything outside of that. Believe it or not, those closest to me would agree. But this fasting right now is awful. I mean, I don't like it. It's 1:30. I got to wait till 4 today until I can put anything in my belly. And I think when you lose, you should put on weight. That's kind of the way I look at it. When you lose, you're depressed.
Comfort food. Comfort food. What's your comfort food go-to?
Anything you put in front
of you. Anything. Leon, you have something specific that if you're not feeling great, makes you feel better?
Comfort food? No, not really. I need to find one because I haven't been feeling great as of
late. You've been on a mission to lose weight, so food has not been a focus for you.
True.
Chicken noodle soup is like the go-to when you don't feel good, like cold-wise, but... There's nothing like French fries or nachos or something that's like really not good for you that makes is kind of goes in the comfort food. Now, then there's like the southern spin on that, right? Like fried chicken, mashed potatoes.
Yeah, all good.
Stuff that makes you feel good about it.
So I'm ready to reach over the table right now. You're killing me. You're mentioning like every food item.
I'm here to support you. I'm actually not here to support you. I'm here to bring you down.
Yeah.
Coffee's all you had today then?
That is it. Black coffee. No sugar in it. No cream. That is it. I can't put any of that type of stuff in me.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I grilled steaks last night for the Rue family to enjoy, and they went over very well, so much so that my six-year-old daughter got up this morning and was like, I should have eaten more steak. Why? I'm sorry I didn't eat all my dinner last night. I hope you didn't throw it away. My six-year-old loves steak.
Yeah.
So I let her know that I've made enough. That
grooming her well.
I won't be home for dinner because of Helmets and Heels, but... her dad can feed her leftovers.
So. That's interesting. My youngest daughter loves steak, too. My oldest could be without, but my youngster, since she was your youngster's age, always loved steak more than perhaps anyone else in the family. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's that whole me generation where I don't want a burger. I want a freaking steak. I don't know. Who knows? That's it, though, for Leon Searcy today.
Hey.
Back tomorrow. Big things going on today for you?
No, I'm just going to lounge around.
That's all right, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, life's all right. Lounging around, you get that opportunity. No doubt about it. All right, well, we got much to do tomorrow.
Yes.
So we'll see you then.
All right, see you.
Can I? To 1:30.
For just a moment here, I'm going to call an audible. There have been some there are some crazy football spreads that we got to get to when we come back. I know that we're supposed to hammer down more on the Jags. I want to take a small timeout from that, if you approve. And even if you don't, we're doing it anyway. That's coming up next.
No, why would we do that? I mean, say this was not an important game or he doesn't need to play or... I mean, I think we need to do a better job of the people playing around him. We're not going to take the approach in any game that we play that we're not going to play players and take guys out and do all this and play somebody else and assume that the opponent that we're playing is not capable of being very competitive. That can be your mindset. That's not my mindset. That's not our mindset. That's not going to be the mindset of our players. And I'm not really interested in any of your suggestions about how we should manage our team and what we should do to try to get better just because we're playing the Citadel.
Oh, it's a happy Nick Saban. I mean, he didn't even raise his voice for crying out loud.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the voice inflection stayed even, par for the course. But how dare you? The audacity of you asking if we will rest an opponent. Or excuse me, rest a starter or two, or rest two.
Going up against the mighty Citadel.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable week in the SEC, but in the top 25 some of these games. I mean, it's really...
We're being sarcastic now.
Well, we just had, I thought, two great weekends.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Of college football.
Yeah, we did.
Now, all of a sudden, you drop this one. Next week is phenomenal, beginning on Thanksgiving and Friday and Saturday.
You know, we announced yesterday that Florida-Florida State game will be at noon, so unfortunately for the second half, we'll be on an airplane on our way to Buffalo. We won't know the outcome until we land, which will be interesting because there's probably going to be 25 people I know who are Gator fans on that plane. And outside of Jalen Ramsey, Telvin Smith, and Rashad Green, I believe I'm the only Seminole on that airplane. But anyway, this week is really a disappointment.
This week is not the does not pack the punch that the previous 2 weeks have in college football. And that's, we get to the point in the season where the contenders have been separated from the pretenders, and this is just the reality of how the college football schedule falls. But did you know, I'm going to throw some lines out at you or some point spreads for the week. This comes from Michael David Smith, who is the managing editor for Pro Football Talk, or one of the managing editors.
Would you rather have three names or a junior or the third on your name? Because I'm Richard Ballew the third. So, you know, that means that I'm from the Silver Spoon.
Uh-huh.
I'm not from the other side of the tracks. I come from a mansion. I've never got my hands dirty. I mean, after all, I'm like Davis Love the third. I'm Richard Ballew the third. What would you rather have?
I don't know.
A Michael David Smith or a third?
Well, women don't get those titles.
I know, but if you
Sarah Jessica Parker?
Not the third, though. I mean, Sarah, there's no...
All right, if you married in and you had a son and your husband's name is Daniel.
It is,
would
yes.
you name him Daniel Rue the third?
No.
Okay.
But that's... Yeah, I don't know, but I get your point. Would you rather have... Now, if you get both, what if you get both?
That'd be outstanding.
Right?
You know what? I don't even have a middle name.
You don't have a middle name?
Really?
My, you know what? My parents weren't flower children. They weren't
oh
this.
My God,
they were just too lazy.
Worse.
They were like, screw this.
Yeah. You weren't a middle flower name. Children.
We'll just call him Richard Ballew III.
He doesn't need it.
My dad's name's Dick. My granddad's name was Dick. At least they named me Rick and not Dick. But I don't have a middle name. I'm Richard Ballew III.
How? What determines? I have to be careful how I say this. What?
So on legal,
do you know what I'm trying to do here?
No.
What determines if you're a Dick or a Rick?
I think it was just the culture change as far as names. Kind of, Dick kind of went the way of Bertha and Agnes.
Yeah,
and
nobody's name.
Who was the one you got me in a couple weeks ago? Was it Linda?
Linda.
Okay.
Linda's not that, but yes, you're right.
There aren't a lot of Dicks around anymore, except for our hardworking engineer, Dickie Allen.
Dickie Allen, good guy.
Is still here. But you don't hear a lot of Richards named Dick anymore. That was the common thing, you know, in the 1900s was through, let's say, the 1950s or 60s.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that's
I couldn't stand being called Rich. That just drove.
Richie.
Oh, man. The Rick or Ricky's okay.
Okay. But
no one's ever called me Dick.
All right.
Like my dad.
That's probably debatable. All right, so the point spreads this week, circling back around to three named Michael David Smith. Let's start at the top.
All right.
With that Alabama Crimson Tide, we heard a cranky Nick Saban saying, why would you assume that we're going to sit anybody this week?
Why would we do that?
Well, maybe, Rick, maybe Nick, because you're favored by 51 points. 51 points, the Alabama Crimson Tide facing the Citadel. How about Clemson? Want to know what Clemson's favored by this week? Clemson happens to be favored by 28.
Yeah.
So there's another top 10 team that is expected to blow out their opponent. And if you're wondering who they have, my computer will cooperate for just a moment here. They will be playing Duke.
Right.
All right. Michigan's
and Duke's had a good year. They have.
Yeah.
For Duke's standard. At least the ACC is playing common ACC teams where, you know, the SEC, who no one could ever, I mean, you can't possibly criticize the SEC. If you do that, you're the villain. But they do this. They line up a cupcake before their season-ending rival.
Michigan is a 27.5-point favorite over Indiana. The Georgia Bulldogs, who will face UMass, and you can hear that on 1010XL 92.5 this Saturday, beginning at 3 o'clock, is favored by 44.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma over Kansas is favored 36 by 36.5 points. LSU facing Rice this weekend as a 44-point favorite. And the Gators are a 39.5-point favorite as they take on Idaho. So it's a perfect week for College Game Day to head to Orlando. And that's what the unfortunate part about this. Central Florida has been screaming for hey, look at us, hey, recognize us. And they go down there because they're on a winning streak and also because there's not really anything else going on.
No, there's not. And, you know, they'll still be excited. It'll be a great opportunity for them. I think college football ratings will be down significantly this week. I think with the holidays coming up and with a lot of football ahead of us and then championship Sunday the week after the regular season finale, tons of eyeballs on television sets. I think people will get away, do a lot of family things this weekend. What this really benefits, who this should benefit more than any, are three schools, Florida, South Carolina, and Georgia, okay. Because they all get cupcakes. And Clemson is playing – Clemson's a great team to play in Duke. You can throw that into their category. But the point I'm trying to make here is that at least they're playing an SEC game.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech – I'll look up who they have. They just won a very emotional, you know, a hard-fought game against Miami. Georgia Tech this weekend has Virginia. That's a conference game. Florida State this weekend has Boston College. That's a conference game. The advantage should be for the three teams who are playing those three ACC teams next week. The way that this schedule is built, it should favor Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida. We'll see if it does a week from Saturday.
Yeah, and I think if my eyes don't deceive me here, guys, the only top 25 matchup, there may be Syracuse and Notre Dame. That's a good game.
And that's where College Game Day should be. Seriously.
No, you're right.
That's where this is number three against number 13. Notre Dame, if they run the table here, are going to the college football playoff. USC can do whatever they want. They're not going anywhere near a college football playoff. Game day should be at Yankee Stadium.
And then the only other top 25 matchup is Iowa State at Texas.
Right, and people around here really don't care much about that game.
No.
I mean, I'm just being honest.
The sake of the schedule of college football games this Saturday, I believe there are two top 25 matchups.
Yeah. It's a shame, I mean, because it's a stay-at-home weekend. You know, but there were some games that I'm sure they figured would be good. You know, NC State, Louisville, when you looked at it before the start of the season, was supposed to be good. Michigan State, Nebraska, when you looked at it before the beginning part of the season, was supposed to be good. BC at Florida State, when you looked at it before the start of the season, was supposed to be good. West Virginia at Oklahoma State before the start of the season was supposed to be good. These games no longer really fall into that category. You know, maybe the next most intriguing game in all of this would be Arizona going to Wazoo. Is Washington State really legit to the period where they're going to run the rest of the schedule and play in the Pac-12 championship game, or do they stub their toe at some point if that is the case? In fact, that could happen this weekend in Pelham against Arizona.
That just happened. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
Seems like every Jaguars tight end is on injured reserve, but one is coming off relatively soon. Austin Seferian Jenkins posts on Instagram that he will be back week 15 against the Washington Redskins. That is a home game for the Jacksonville Jaguars, December 16th. About a month from now, the return of ASJ.
All right, I'm going to need him to have about 20 receptions in week 15 and 16 if he's going to be the leading pass catcher this year.
If your truth-telling name will stay that way, right?
Yeah, we had to do a segment on what was the worst prediction made all year. Well, Ballou not only had the Jaguars going to the Super Bowl, but he also picked ASJ to lead the team in receptions.
Oh.
Neither one of those two are happening. Hey, Ben Koyak was brought back yesterday. Of course, he caught the difference maker before the Jalen pick in the playoff win here against the Buffalo Bills. David Greenidge was waived yesterday, so they added a tight end in Ben Koyak. That was one transaction that this football team did make yesterday evening.
Back to the Jags. We will get back into the conversation. We'll update you on the latest on the social media accounts of all the Jaguars and what does it all really mean. That's coming up next.
Midday Chalk on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Remember before the week I said it's different when you haven't been doing anything, then you get in there and you practice the 1 week. So you know, it was a good feel. I think we could have gotten, you know, more push from him at times. I think, you know, he'll look at a couple plays where he wanted to go more vertical, I'm sure. But I think he said it best, you know, over 100 yards of offense and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, we're happy with that.
And a lot of touches, 24 on the ground, caught a few balls as well. Leonard Fournette, I believe he caught 5. So that's 29 overall touches for Fournette in his return. And it gets you wondering a little bit. You know, they're the high pick, and you watch what Barkley did a night ago. For those who watch Monday Night Football and other top picks, what they're doing with Elliott, what Gurley is doing. And then you bring up Leonard Fournette. And, you know, I looked at ProFootballReference.com. He has officially now played a full season. He played 13 games as a rookie. He's played 3 games now in year 2. So that's 16 games. In 16 games, 312 rushing attempts, 1,164 yards, 10 touchdowns, an average of 3.7 per. He's also caught 45 footballs for 377 yards. 8.4 is his average, and 2 more touchdowns. All right. The eye test. And with the health problems and everything else, Leonard Fournette, was he worthy of the pick that high based on the production that he has given this team in a year and a half?
The answer's no. I mean, and I think you gave – I don't have to go a whole lot further than that, do I? Because of the availability. Whether that's fair or not, Rick, that's up for everybody else to decide, I suppose. How much emphasis, how much responsibility, how much excuse do you go and say, well, you know, it's really not fair because he hasn't been available. You know, his sample size is smaller. But
he's played in 16 of 25 games.
It's not very much. Not very much for a guy that you spent a very high draft pick on and had big expectations for and built the offense around and all these things. He's not been available. Now, the downside of that is it's injury related. And at some point, you kind of, that wears thin, right? I mean, you go, well, he's injured. So do we take into consideration, how much do we take into consideration how injured he's been? But no, I mean, you just read off the stats that give you, no, he's not been available. So far, it's not been very successful.
No, it hasn't. I mean, the numbers are good if you base everything on, you know, a year and a half's worth of work, and we'll get to 16 games. I mean, those are good numbers. Are they top 4 pick numbers? Are they there with Gurley? No. Are they there with Elliott? No. And granted, he's missed a lot of time because of his suspension. I mean, forget about the numbers for
a
second.
He's only been available in of the 3 games you mentioned. He's only played in 1 full game this year, right?
Yeah, I mean,
he came out early against the Giants, and then they tried to get him to go against the Jets. He's played in one complete.
He had 20 carries before Sunday. He had 24 carries.
Yeah.
Between
the Jets and the Giants.
He had 20 there.
He had 20 against the Giants.
Yeah, he had more carries on Sunday at Indianapolis, 24, than he had in his previous 2 games,
right?
A combined 20.
Yeah. Okay.
So he has 44 carries in 3 games. But let's forget about the numbers for a second. I'm talking about the eye test. I mean, Todd Gurley, end of discussion. Zeke Elliott, end of discussion. I don't care what numbers Barkley put up last night. It's the eye test. It's what he does on the field, the separation that he is able to get, his overall vision. I mean, I mentioned that yesterday, and again, some people are like, well, wait a minute. His timing is off. His vision is off because he hasn't been out there playing. And yeah, okay, I'll listen to you there. But, I mean, that play where he was tackled at the 5, he tried to run over that defensive back. I mean, he had absolutely an opportunity to cut to the right and go down the sideline for a touchdown.
Do you think that's a mental thing? Do you think he thinks if he cuts, he might hurt himself?
No, I hope not. He said, speaking with him after the game, he said that the hamstring gave him no resistance. He was not concerned about it, and I want to believe that. What I'm more worried, I almost wish that was the answer, because what I'm more concerned about is the long-term answer with Leonard Fournette. Does he have the vision to be a great back in this league? There have been numerous times where I've sat with people who understand the game better than I do, who have told me that he's gone left when he should have gone right, and he's gone right when he should have gone left. He is leaving yards on the football field.
And that's kind of relates to a text we just got here on the text line driven by Duval Ford from the 803. Leonard Fournette is Trent Richardson part deux.
No, I mean, no. Trent Richardson was terrible. Leonard Fournette's a very good back. Is he worthy of the top four pick? Not even close based on what we've seen so far. Doesn't mean that it won't turn around for him. Doesn't mean he won't have a great game this weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tyrone Wheatley has done a nice job with these backs. I mean, after all, they led the league in rushing a year ago. It hasn't happened this year. Will it happen here during the final seven games of the season? If it was a motor or toughness or things like that, I'd be more concerned. I guess what I'm asking is, can you teach a guy to be more patient? Can you teach a guy to have better vision? Is there ways to correct that through practice and film study, or is it going to remain the way it's been?
The biggest problem I have with the selection of Leonard Fournette is not just at the number four slot, but it's the guy you selected. Okay, you chose to go running back. That was a big need for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But the guy you chose is not an elusive running back. He's not a guy who's going to break a whole lot of tackles. He may run through some of them, but he's not going to be a guy who's going to shake and bake in the open field and get around you. The biggest question with Fournette was about his hands, his receiving, which he has shown he can catch the ball. He does have two hands that works, but he's not the receiving threat that a Le'Veon Bell, Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, any of these, Christian McCaffrey especially. Christian McCaffrey, if that would have been the Jaguars' first-round pick, it may be a different offense because he is more of a dual-threat guy than Leonard Fournette will ever be.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, you can always look back on it and say, why didn't they get Alvin Kamara? You know, you could have drafted him. I mean, you could have drafted Patrick Mahomes and turned around and gotten Alvin Kamara. That's always going to be.
Sure.
But that applies for every other team in the league as
right.
well.
This is more about the line of thinking that, hey, you got the running back, but how do you not see that the NFL right now, this day and age, it's about having a dual threat guy on the backfield because he is a skill position guy who's not just going to run the ball through the tackles. You're going to throw it to him on third down, third and short, get that first down, move the chains, and the Jaguars just didn't see that, and they took a guy who is only a power back.
So he had, you take away that 31-yarder, which, again, he tried to bowl the guy over at the five, and he was tackled. So that's 31 yards. That's 25. That's 4 for 25. Still a productive day. I mean, Leonard Fournette caught 5 footballs on Sunday. He led the team. He was tied for the lead in the team with receptions, and he was second overall in yardage behind only Dante Moncrief. I mean, so he had a good day. Was it a spectacular day? No. But, I mean, again, 93 yards for – actually, it was 109 yards for Leonard Fournette on 29 touches.
Yeah. That's not a great average.
You can do the math there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he averaged 2.2 per running. And he averaged 11.2 receiving. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, despite the talk that we've had about Jalen, and really this is the first time that I can remember with Ramsey where we've questioned what he did defensively. We've always questioned Ramsey off the football field, things that he says, things along those lines. I'm talking about during the game.
Mm-hmm.
He freelanced apparently a couple of times during the loss on Sunday. It's really the first time we've had to call that out. But he's always played well. I mean, he is the best player on this team. If you're building this team, he's your top A, number one pick. Leonard Fournette should be there right there with him. And the point that I'm trying to make is, based on what we have seen so far with Leonard Fournette, he's not that guy.
Comes back to availability. If you're not available to play, you become a non-factor. And then when you return, it takes some time for people to figure out how much you're actually bringing to the table, right? I mean, when you've got one full game, 9 games into the season, it makes it tough for people to think that you are the answer right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see. With 7 games.
You would hope that the better football is ahead of Leonard Fournette.
That
he's not as good as he's going to get. He'll get much better.
That's very true. All right, well, go back to the college talk when Mike Huguenin joins us.
Now, SEC Power Rankings with college football expert Mike Huguenin. Brought to you by Dixie Vodka, made in America, raised in the South.
He's an emotional kid. You know what I mean? I told him he was going to get booed. I've been here before. I remember,
I mean, 2006, I think we had a guy won the national championship for us, and we'd run. And you know, if we ran Chris, like every time, sometimes we'd run Tim off and Chris back on, and people were like, sir, booing him. Goodness gracious. I mean, guy won like SEC's all-time leading passer. We're okay. You know, best position in the world. I told you, Emery's the most popular guy in town now, right? I mean, right? Trask gets hurt. Emery's like, he's the biggest rock star there is now. You're the backup quarterback.
All right, Mike Hugan is here. Joins us each and every Tuesday alongside Lauren Rue. I am Rick Ballew. Let's get things started with that. I remember the Chris Leak career, Mike, the all-time leading passer, never embraced at Florida. I mean, Tebow was waiting. That was one of the reasons why. But it seems like he was always held by Gator fans. So negatively was Chris Leak, and that continues now with Felipe Franks.
Yeah, there was a high standard for Florida fans set by Steve Spurrier quarterbacks and then Urban Meyer quarterbacks. And, yeah, people forget that Leak was the starting quarterback on the 2006 national title team. And Franks, he is not a high-level quarterback right now, and who knows if he ever will become one. I would argue that he is better than last year, and he certainly – ran extremely well this past Saturday. He said he played mad, and it won't take him playing mad to beat Idaho. But if I'm a Florida fan, I hope he's mad when they play Florida State. But when you run for 367, as Florida did against South Carolina, you should win the game. And they had to sweat it out because the defense was not very good. But Franks delivered a win, and that's the ultimate bottom line.
Mike, we've seen this Florida team drop a game to Kentucky, then go on an impressive roll that included two wins over, at the time, fairly decent ranked teams, Mississippi State, and then, of course, LSU was fifth at the time. But this win on Saturday almost looks to me like so far the biggest win of the season. Would you agree?
Yeah, in some respects. I mean, you're losing to a team that you don't have the roster advantage over many teams you've played this year. Florida has the decided roster advantage over South Carolina. And the way the defense played in the first half, people were booing the team. Then they get down 31-14, and you're like, my goodness, they're getting blown out by Will Muschamp. But Florida regrouped, and I think you're right. It did seem to they played with a resolve they had not shown since, I guess, the Vanderbilt game. But on the heels of what happened to Missouri, the first 2.5 quarters this past Saturday, I think the general feeling was, wow, this team peaked in October, and now we maybe thought we could win 9 or 10, and now we're going to go 7-5. But I think now people are like, hey, we could go 9-3, and I think it was an important win. I think it proved that the players are buying what Mullen's selling, and he got a good performance from a much maligned quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it was really an opportunity. We've seen it around here where players have quit. I mean, it's been mentioned at Florida State. They've been wondering about it somewhat. At Miami, boy, I mean, you lose this game, all of a sudden you lose three straight before Idaho. This ends up being a disaster. And the recipe was really there for that. I mean, booing the crowd, late arriving, not a sellout, down 17. If they come from behind, they win it. They blast Idaho here, rest up, get ready for Florida State. They win that in a bowl. All of a sudden, you close out the year, Mike, going into recruiting by winning four straight football games and winning 10 games in year one for Dan Mullen.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. And like you said, you brought up the Miami and Florida State programs right now. Miami has, man, they hit the wall and bounced back. They're not looking good at all. Florida State's really struggling. UCF's the best team in the state right now. But I think Florida, you're right, if they can get to 10 wins, the first year of the Dan Mullen era is a resounding success, because this is not a high-level team still. There are holes in a lot of places, secondary for one, linebacker for one. The offensive line isn't as good as it should be considering all the experience there, but it is a lot better than last year. But you're right, a 10-win season this year for the Gators, I would think Mullen and his staff would go into the offseason on cloud nine.
Mike, the schedule for the college football this weekend is not as exciting as it's been, but that's kind of what happens when we get to this point in the season. But the highlight for the weekend will be that Syracuse-Notre Dame matchup. Could we expect Notre Dame to finally lose a game this weekend?
I don't think so, but Syracuse, I think people, you know, Syracuse, come on, how good can they really be? Well, they have a really good offense, especially when Eric Dungy plays within himself. He's a playmaking quarterback who tries sometimes too hard to make a play, and he has been turnover prone. The defense isn't much, but the offense can keep them in the game. It's at Yankee Stadium. Obviously a weird site for a football game, but you know, it'll be a pro Notre Dame crowd. We all know that. But Ian Book is supposed to be back on Saturday. I think Notre Dame's about 10 points better. I think they're vastly more physical, and if they get their running game cranked up, they're going to win. And Dexter Williams is a great example of a guy who's been, no matter where you go, there's guys who are like, what is wrong with this guy? He never produced. Well, about midway through the season, Dexter Williams, who's a kid from Orlando, all of a sudden sort of turned it on, and he has become, in some respects, the focal point of the offense. And when Ian Book is healthy, and you got the Boykin kid on the outside, and you got Dexter Williams running, that is a very good and very explosive Notre Dame offense. So I think that the Syracuse defense is not very good. So I think Notre Dame wins a high-scoring game, but I think the Irish win by at least 10.
College football these days, you rest your starting quarterback against Florida State to get him ready for Syracuse.
You're right. Depending on who you talk to at Notre Dame, people were telling me last week, well, Ian Book probably could have gone if it was a vital, vital, vital game. And Wimbush played pretty well.
Right.
But again, when Notre Dame's running, the rushing attack is quite good. They are extremely deep at running back. And if you're a Florida fan, Miami fan, or FSU fan, you probably look and envy, wow, they really block people up front.
Unbelievable. Hey, give us 30 seconds. We spent a lot of time on Dan Mullen first year. For Jimbo Fisher, I think it's kind of gone the way that it did. 6-4, I think they beat UAB, lose to LSU. So I see a 7-5. An opinion there, and also the job that Jeremy Pruitt has done so far at Tennessee.
Well, I think Pruitt, the win over Kentucky last week, I think puts Tennessee in great shape for a bowl game. And that's pretty impressive considering they were winless in the SEC last year. It's interesting about Fisher. They were sitting there with two losses and then suffered back-to-back road losses. Now, all of a sudden, you're right, they're going to go 7-5. I think at one point, people there were thinking, hey, we could go 9-3. So I think there is a slight bit of disappointment. That offensive line is another unit that's not very good, but the A&M defense is really good, and I think Fisher has sort of changed the way they think about things from the way Kevin Sumlin's squad did.
Yep, no doubt. Hey, Mike, thank you. We'll pick it up again next Tuesday.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
There he goes. Mike Huguenin with us right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, much more to do on the Jags. Also, we're getting set for yet another J-Fund Radiothon that is coming up at the end of the month. We'll talk to Brian Coughlin about that on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, the J-Fund Radiothon returns to 1010XL and 92.5 FM. We love being partners with those outstanding folks who do it each and every year. And the end of the month is when it is scheduled. That'll be Tuesday, November 27th, from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. We have put together record-setting numbers. You, the listener, have been so incredible in this, where we have upped the ante year after year after year after year. And it keeps getting bigger. It keeps getting better. It'll be the 11th year that we have done this here on 1010XL. And, 92.5 FM. It's just been sensational. Brian Coughlin is here. Of course, you heard him throughout whenever we do a radiothon. He is the son of Tom Coughlin, and he is also a part of the board over at the J Fund. How you doing, Brian?
Doing well, Rick. Lauren, how's everybody here?
Safe travels in and out of London with the family?
Safe, at times messy. As I told you during the break, we had a little one get ill at one point, but we had a great time, fun trip. Wish we'd have brought a victory back, but yeah, that's just the way it goes.
And we were talking about just how hard that is to have a young child who's sick on a plane, especially a lengthy plane ride going from London to Jacksonville, in this case going from Jacksonville to London. But this is what the J-Fund Radiothon is all about. Can you imagine having a child who is sick all the time?
No, well said. I can't. The need in our area to help families with cancer continues to grow. We're so thankful for this station's partnership because approximately 96 kids are diagnosed with cancer every year in Jacksonville, and we want to continue to help them. Last year, with your help, we raised about $136,000. We'd like to do better this year. Keep that line slanting upward so we continue to help the families that need our help.
Brian, we get new listeners here in 1010XL every single day. There's new people moving into the area every single day who maybe aren't as familiar with this Coughlin J Fund and what exactly it provides. Kind of give us a brief overview of what exactly happens with this.
Sure. Well, the mission statement is to provide financial, emotional, and practical support to families facing childhood cancer. What my father saw as a young coach at Boston College was a player of his named Jay McGillis, who was stricken with cancer while on the team, and he had a firsthand view of what that does to a family from a financial standpoint, because nothing else matters when your child is diagnosed with cancer, and you immediately drop everything and turn to that child to bring them whatever comfort they can bring. And with that, oftentimes a parent has to quit a job, or both parents have to quit a job, or people need to drop out of school if they have older family members. And so what the J Fund does is steps in and pays household expenses so that that focus will always remain on the child. And believe it or not, we're at the point now in our city where the J Fund averages writing 7 checks a day to families so that they can keep their lights on or drive to the hospital with gas cards and things like that. And so that's what we do. That's why we do it. And we want to keep the focus on this area and continue bringing comfort to our families.
The day will be Tuesday, November 27th. That is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. That, of course, is after Black Friday and after Cyber Monday. And there'll be a lot going on in the sports world. But that show on that day is really unlike anything else that we ever do around here. I mean, it's been such a tough year. And, Brian, I find myself complaining because – Florida State stinks, and the Jaguars have really struggled, and you get angry, and you complain about things, and that's kind of the way it goes. But, man, this particular day, that is all forgotten, and this becomes so humbling. I mean, some of these stories are so rewarding, but others are heartbreaking, and it doesn't always turn out with the happy ending.
It's very true. It's very true. For every positive story, it seems like there's one that just rips the heart right out of you. And on your station, you'll hear from some of the families. And, in fact, 2 young girls who were on this program last year, Natalie and Elizabeth, have those positive stories. And so we're very, very thankful that that we can share those stories to keep people uplifted, because the reality of it is, until this disease is cured, we're going to lose children who and their families don't deserve this one bit. And it falls in their laps. They've got to deal with it. And they are heroic in their efforts, and we're just trying to help them get there.
Brian Coughlin is with us today talking about the upcoming J Fund Radiothon that we'll have here, as Rick mentioned, on Tuesday, November the 27th. Excuse me. Brian, one of the things that you guys are implementing this year, or have been implementing, is the sibling support program. And we talked about this last week with some of the ladies from the foundation, and this just is an amazing concept. The idea that parents have to go through the stuff, and the child who's actually sick is going through a hellacious time, but they usually have siblings, and they're kind of left out in a world where mom and dad aren't the same to them right now because they're focusing on the child, and their sibling is going through this, and they don't have the brain capacity to understand what's going on. So the need for this, I think, is amazing, and I commend you guys for advancing this every single year.
Thank you. Yeah. The longer we do this, the more we want to bring a comprehensive approach to it and help everybody who's touched by it. We've had these sibling events, and it's in its infancy, but there are phenomenons at these events where, you know, the brothers and sisters of children with certain type of cancer find themselves together and find themselves relating
bonded
to each other.
Yes.
Bonding over what has come their way. And it's really rewarding to watch. And so thank you for mentioning our sibling program.
Some information that you should know, any amount of money is fine. I mean, it doesn't matter. We understand that it's different as far as your means. But the $96 is what we are asking for local families. And you can do that on the team text line by going to 52182. To donate $96, or you can go to the tcjfund.org to do that. Again, text team 52182, or go to tcjfund.org. in the 10 years that we have done this, Brian, our listeners at 1010XL at 92.5 FM, on radio listeners alone, have raised $637,000.
Isn't that amazing? That's really amazing. And the good that that does is just phenomenal. And I remind you that those donations can be made now, even though the radiothon is in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify
we
that.
We can start now.
Don't have to wait. And I want to clarify one other thing in regard to the – because sometimes people get nervous when they text into something and they automatically think it comes out of their bank account and then it's $96. Not at all. So when you text TEAM to 52182, you're then prompted to sign up. So mm-hmm. you give permission to – and it doesn't necessarily mean the 96. That's what's suggested for – the obvious reasons, the amount of children that are diagnosed. But you can give as much as you can. If it's past that, that's even better. So wanted to just clarify that.
Yes, and we have a little bit of rivalry here as well among the show. I you see the trophy from last year with your dad on it and everything. The Drill officially won in 2017 where they raised $35,625 in a four-hour period. Here during Midday Chalk, our three-hour period dwarfed everyone out. So I wanted a recount.
No kidding.
Okay?
No kidding.
I mean, I told him, Brian, they've changed it this year. We've changed
is that,
it this year.
Is that 100%?
It's going to be an average. Yes, we have the official. Yes, it has been official, and he complained about it, of course. And I said, listen, we're going to crush it this year. Don't worry about it.
Well, hopefully the election issues will have been resolved by then. Yes. I can plug you in with some legal counsel who will probably be looking for something to do come that time of the month.
Well, that'll be here before you know it. And, again, it's great every year. Brian, it's always good to have you with us. Anything else you want to add before we say goodbye?
Just another thank you. The support that your station has given us has been fantastic. Thank you for opening your arms to us and our families. And please continue to encourage folks to help us.
And as we always say, we're just glad that we can throw that there, because this is all about the listening audience. I mean, 100% about them and the money that they have spent in 10 years. Again, over $637,000 that you out there, the listener, have given to the J Fund Radiothon. Brian Coughlin, always a lot of fun. Good seeing you.
Thank you, as always. Good seeing you as well.
Thanks, Brian. All right, we gave away Weird Al tickets yesterday. We'll do that again today. How about caller number 96? No, just kidding, Tyler. I wouldn't do that.
No,
to you.
No.
How about caller number 6 walks away with what prize, Tyler?
It is a pair of tickets to go see Weird Al Yankovic play some of his music and a rock and comedy symphonic experience at the Florida Theater on April 16, 2019. And what caller was that, Lauren Rue?
We'll do caller number 6.
Thank you very much.
641-1010. The Midday Chalk Teaser is coming up next.
All right, good stuff there. Having Brian Coughlin with us talking about the J Fund. Again, that's coming up in a couple of Tuesdays. It'll be the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. Very special day around here as we will raise a lot of money for kids in need. The yearly J Fund, the 11th annual, will be Tuesday, November 27th. All right, do we have a winner, tickets-wise?
We do.
Weird Al Yankovic.
It's our guy Mike. He's headed to see Weird Al April 16, 2019 to go see that rockin' comedy symphonic experience.
Is it Yankovic or Yankovic?
I don't know.
Is it John Yerkovic or John Yerkovic?
I say Yerkovic.
Is it Malkovich or Malkovic? Same thing? Same difference?
Yes. Is it Peter Mahovlich or Peter Mahovlich? Former Montreal Canadiens.
Is it Jog or is it Yog?
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting, but nonetheless, that is the latest there. All right, truckcrashlaw.com, each and every day, they bring you the
Midday
Chalk teaser. And the reason why I'm slow and in a pause here is that I still cannot believe that the great game of baseball got swallowed into this trap. There is absolutely no way in the world that Ohtani should have been the rookie of the year. Yet he got it yesterday, really in a landslide over Miguel Andujar. And I just don't understand it. 25 of the first place votes. I mean, it was unanimous. It was a landslide for a guy who played in about the third of the amount of games as Andujar. Andujar had 27 home runs. He had 297. He led the league in hits for rookies, doubles for rookies. He put up incredible numbers. Plus, he really guided the team to the playoffs and was arguably their most clutch player down the stretch. Yet Ohtani, because of his popularity, was voted in.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
Do you think there's any chance this also went in his favor because he beat out two Yankees? I mean, the fact that the split, you know, the votes, and I don't know.
Yes, I think that with the MVP coming up, I honestly would vote for Martinez. Mm-hmm. He's not even one of the three final selections. But I think Mookie Betts hurt them a little bit. I think when you have two, you go back to the great Dave Winfield, Don Mattingly situation. When you have two great ones, you're going to take votes away a little bit. In Ohtani, you know, with the two great Yankee seasons that we saw, Ohtani was by himself out there in Los Angeles and got so much attention. But the guy won four games as a pitcher, and he had a decent year with the bat. But rookie of the year? Mm-mm.
Before we say hello to Hayes Carline, quick question, Rick. Does Shohei Ohtani win the rookie of the year award if he does not pitch at all? Batter only,
no
Shohei
way.
Ohtani.
Not even close. Not even close. Nope, he does not answer to that question, in my opinion. All right, truckcrashlaw.com right here. In Jacksonville, they're the only firm that deals with this directly. What do they deal with? If you've been injured, if you've been seriously hurt, if even there was a death involved to a family member or a friend and it happened by a bus, an RV, a tractor trailer, it's as simple as going to the only firm in the state of Florida that deals with this full time. This is what they specialize in. That is truckcrashlaw.com.
Now, it's the 2-Minute Drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Get your Gator Game Day tailgate catering delivered to your tailgate every home Florida Gator game. Visit moescateringfl.com to order.
Hey, Carline, this is an abbreviated version of the handoff here because we are up against it, so I'll make this quick. Tell us about the most recent thing you wrote about on 1010XL.com.
Yeah, it was interesting yesterday. Doug Marone covered a bunch of issues, real concerns, the busted coverages, the Lindor injury, really keeping the team together and focused. And, you know, I thought he had some insightful comments. So I just relayed that in a quick blog on 1010XL.com that hopefully people will check out. That's sponsored by Lloyd's Construction and Consulting. So appreciate the shout out. And, going to be a fun show. We got our college football report coming up, so we're going to talk Gators, Noles, and Canes. One guy will be happy, two guys will not be.
Love the word and the name, I should say, Lloyd. Can you name the movie? Things look a little bit slow here this evening, Lloyd. And then he breaks out into laughter.
That's The Shining.
Hayes Carline, ladies and gentlemen. Hayes Carline out
of
nowhere.
I was going Dumb and Dumber, but
he is a very willful boy.
Things
a very
a little slow tonight,
naughty boy,
Lloyd.
If you don't mind me saying so. Great movie.
Your money's not good here, sir. All right, good stuff coming up this afternoon.
Thanks, guys.
Hayes Carline and Company coming up right now. That'll do it. Helmets and Heels tonight,
yes,
Lauren.
Yes, Helmets and Heels tonight, 6 o'clock. Be there, please, and thank you. Also, I want to plug for XL Primetime tonight. They'll have Charlie Ward will join them after us. They'll go from, I believe, 8 to, is it 11 or 10? I think it's 11. Maybe I made him work an extra hour. Either way, they stay tuned.
Well, you're the boss.
Them.
You tell them. Yeah. And they'll listen.
Stay tuned for that after Helmets and Heels from 6 to 8.
Touchdown Charlie Ward. All right. Outstanding. Thank you to Remedy. They help bring you the program today. Remember, no matter where you're listening to us, they have jobs there. Okay. Beach, want a job there? Bam. They got them. West Side, bam. No matter where you're listening, full or part-time help available. Go to remedystaff.com or pull up the brand new app at Remedy Staff. For Lauren Rue, Leon Searcy, and Styx, I'm Rick Ballew. Back again tomorrow, noon to 3.